You know, I oftentimes think I have 5 kids right now. You know, if someone were to come and say, okay, I'm going to take this one and I'm going to murder him and there is nothing you can do about it and the government is okay with it and you don't get to say anything, nobody's going to listen to you because it's not your choice. How would that make me feel?
Hi, I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute. It's great to have you with us on this episode of Straight Talk on Life Issues.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves.
You know, the conversation surrounding abortion has primarily focused on women, but men may seriously struggle with the after effects of abortion loss because men hurt too.
That's right. Men have strong emotions regarding that. Fathers who experience abortion loss may also experience negative impact on their lives, including depression, anxiety, and anger.
And Victor, abortion deeply conflicts with God's will for a man's life and his mental well-being. Men who have partners that have abortions fall into one of 4 categories. Either they opposed their partner's abortion, like Sean, you'll hear about his story. They didn't give any advice to their partner, didn't seem to care about the abortion. 3, they supported the choice to have an abortion, or 4, weren't even aware of the pregnancy, and that happens a lot.
That's right, and today we have a very special program because we're going to talk to 2 fathers about their abortion regret. First joining us is Kevin Fleming. He's a divorced father of 2, and he had an abortion 12 years ago. We're also joined by Sean Corcoran, who shares with us a very dramatic story of an abortion that happened in his youth.
Sean and Kevin, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's begin by getting a brief summary of your stories. Kevin, let's start with you.
I have been married over 20 years, and we had 2 boys. I was getting older and around 48, and we discovered we were pregnant again. And, you know, that's a little bit old to be a dad to start with, but I adjusted to it and I was excited, and life went on pretty well through the pregnancy. And until towards the end, we went to just a routine checkup, not expecting anything to happen. The pregnancy was normal. The doctor was looking through the charts that day and noticed that we had missed a Down syndrome test earlier on. We got the results of that day, and it was a positive test. They said there was no doubt, there's 99% sure that the child would have Down syndrome. Because we were, you know, so late in the pregnancy, the legal time for abortion was right there. You had to decide. The doctor was explaining to us, you know, how hard it would be for older parents to try to raise that boy. He suggested and recommended that we consider abortion. So there we were. We were, you know, we thought we were going to a routine doctor's appointment and then going shopping afterwards. And we get the news that, you know, he's a Down syndrome child. And we had to decide that day what to do. You know, your head is spinning, traumatized. You don't know what to do. Then you have a deadline on top of that. I hate to admit it, but, you know, the wife, she was broken and she couldn't decide. So she left it to me to decide. Just in the want of trying to get that day over with, I chose abortion. And once the decision was made, it progressed fast. We got a doctor. Our baby doctor wouldn't do the procedure, but he found a doctor who would. And I remember sitting holding hands with my wife while she was on the hospital bed, and the doctor across from us, and he said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yes." So you watch him. He had his needle prepared and he stuck it in the pregnant belly and stopped the heart. Once they were sure it was stopped, they induced labor and my boy was born, but born dead. And the nurse asked if I wanted to hold him, and I took him. That was the worst thing in my life, of course. You know, you're holding your son that just minutes before that, you know, he was alive inside mama. On my word, he was dead. I held him all night while they took care of the wife. I just cried, bottom of my soul. I failed my son in the biggest way. I sinned the greatest sin against God. I wish I was, you know, a stronger man at that time, and I could have said no to the doctor. Then after that, it's all regret for 10 years. Before we left the hospital in the morning, they said he was, because he was so far along, that he had to have a name and he had to have a proper burial. They asked if we wanted to, arrange a funeral home to pick him up or take him with us. We took him with us, come to the hometown funeral parlor. I called the pastor to meet us there. But it was, even the pastor and everyone else, they assumed it must be natural causes, because we never talked about it. There's no way I could tell people that I actually asked for this, right? And we were, of course, we were in tears and distraught, and nobody asked too many questions. From that point on, you're lying to everybody. You feel condemned from God. You feel like the worst father in the world because you ended your own son's life. But you can't tell anybody what you did because fear their condemnation.
At what point, Kevin, after the abortion, did you come to the conclusion that it was the wrong choice?
As soon as I held him, how could I have done this? It broke my heart.
So you suffered in silence with a great deal of grief, shame, and remorse. What was the breakthrough for you that you were able to talk about this?
Well, the first 5 years, 6 years, my heart had turned to stone. It did. I tried not to feel anything. So that, that ruins your relationship with your wife and your friends and everybody. Because you try to hold this inside, and if you have any emotion at all, then it's going to come out, right? But after a while, you just can't continue with that burden forever. And I started looking for forgiveness. I prayed on my knees and beside my bed, but I didn't feel forgiven. I did that numerous times. I actually went to a different pastor. I shared with her, and we prayed together for forgiveness. Maybe I was forgiven then, but I didn't feel it, and I still felt the same shame. It wasn't until I found the people at Rachel's Vineyard, and then I actually went to one of their retreats, that I found that there's other people who feel the same, and they have been forgiven. They had taught me how to ask for forgiveness and to believe that Jesus would forgive even the worst of people.
Was that a turning point for you then, Kevin?
That was the biggest turning point, yes. I wish I had the words to describe the difference between going when I went to that weekend and when I left. It was amazing. I wish I had the words, but it was amazing.
That's the power of the Holy Spirit, isn't it?
Yes.
He made you a new man. Do you feel that the burden is largely lifted now?
It is, yes. There's still a burden there, but it is 100 times less than it was. And the more times you can talk to someone else that you might help or influence, it gets less.
What is your son's name?
Samuel. Small things take that burden away. For that same 10 years, he was in an unmarked grave. I just couldn't bring myself to go to a funeral home and get a marker for him. But just this year, his day was actually June 12th. And this June 12th, he had his gravestone. So I went there on his day, and once we got a marker for him, and it felt a little better.
Well, God will provide those steps along the way. That is such a trauma to the heart, mind, and soul that you just don't heal overnight. As far as feeling forgiven, it's a process of fully accepting the forgiveness that Christ has won for you. And it's a full understanding that the blood of Christ on that cross covered every sin. So when he said it is finished, he covered the sins of what we call the little sins and the sins we call the big ones too. So you can rest assured that as far as the east is from the west, that's the distance of your sin from you, because God has forgiven you for that sin. He understands losing a son. He was there. He was in your shoes. So he understands that pain. And he will be providing salve on that wound and helping you through life. Thank you for sharing this story. I can tell it was difficult for you to share, but God uses the ashes of our lives to help others and grow his kingdom. So thank you for that, Kevin. Sean, could you briefly tell us about your experience with abortion and what happened after that?
Yes. So I was 19 years old. I was away at college. I had a girlfriend. And one night she came into my room, sat me down, and let me know that she was pregnant. And immediately, you know, my mind went to fix it mode. Okay, how are we going to fix this? What are we going to do? What do I need to do, you know, to step up? What do I need to do? How's this going to affect my life? Trying to come up with solutions in my mind, completely unprepared to come up with any solutions, but that's where my head went. And I don't remember exactly what I said other than some attempt at it's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And her reaction was very quick and surprising. She just said, well, I'm not going to have the baby. I'm going to have an abortion. And to that, I had no response immediately because that's not something that was on my radar. And so we did have conversations about it. I let her know that that was not something that I was okay with. I let her know that we couldn't do this. And it wasn't really a question in her mind. This was a fact. This is what she was going to do. And so the conversation didn't really go anywhere. As soon as she left the room, I called my dad, told him what was going on. He, of course, had the same reaction that I had. And I was about 9 hours away at the time. And I think he drove the next day. And her mom also came to town. They talked. We all talked. But it was not a decision that I had or that he had any voice in. You know, we were silenced by the laws. You know, abortion at that time, as far as I was aware, was not something that men even really spoke out about. And so, and even if it was, I wasn't, like I said, I didn't have the capacity to speak about it publicly. I was just broken. So I spent the rest of that semester sitting in my room, staring at the wall, and my roommate would bring me food, and I failed out of college. And my life just kind of took a downward turn from there. I moved back home to Lake Charles. I got into the college here, the university here. And personally, I shoved it all down. I tried to forget it, you know, like we are taught as men, you know, just dust yourself off, pick yourself up and keep trucking forward. And so that is what I attempted to do on the outside. On the inside, there was something very deeply missing. And so what ended up happening on the outside is I did okay for a semester or two, started partying heavily, started doing drugs. Fast forward 7 years later, and I am a homeless meth addict. None of this in my mind was connected to the abortion. Like I said before, I had shoved it down. It was something that I did not think about. I went to treatment, and it was at treatment when we began talking about, you know, the things that affected us from an emotional, mental standpoint, you know, and digging through my past with a counselor, that the abortion came back up for the first time. And it was there that I was able to identify that this was the turning point in my life. This was the void that had been created that I was trying to fill with partying, with drugs, with alcohol, with women, with anything that would take my mind off of that, the abortion. And so she gave me the same advice or suggestion that Kevin was given, which was to name my child. And I named him Michael, which is my father's middle name, and to write him a letter and, you know, to kind of let him know how I felt, let him know that I was sorry, that I couldn't protect him, and to kind of start that healing journey in my own life.
Sean, you mentioned that first moment when you were first told that she was pregnant, and then going into the abortion. What were your emotions like at that time?
Shock, disbelief. Emotionally, I would say emptiness. It's hard to describe because it's not something that I had ever experienced before or have ever experienced again, nor do I hope to. But I imagine that it is similar to the loss of a child, similar to the loss of someone very close to you. You know, just despair is probably the best word. Hopelessness, helplessness. You know, there was really nothing I could do. You know, I oftentimes think I have five kids right now. You know, if someone were to come and say, okay, I'm going to take this one and I'm going to murder him and there is nothing you can do about it and the government is okay with it and you don't get to say anything. You can certainly talk all you want, but nobody's going to listen to you because it's not your choice. How would that make me feel in that situation? And the man that I am today, in the capacity that I have today, it would be a fight to the death. In the capacity that I had as a 19-year-old boy, internally, those same emotions, internally, that same struggle, internally, that same fight, but without the outward ability to effect change.
You know, they hardly acknowledged the grief that women suffer after an abortion. So the grief that men suffer is almost non-existent. And I think, too, that it has been demonstrated already between your stories that grief is such a personal process. Thankfully, through the grace of Christ, that healing can take place and you can move on, albeit with a scar on your psyche, because you will always bear that scar. But it's a wound that will be healed and a major difference. As Kevin mentioned, the difference after that weekend retreat that he experienced, You didn't, Sean, associate any emotions with the abortion. Kevin, was that your situation or was it different?
Mine was all associated with the abortion. My experience is not, you know, the feelings are the same, but I don't know if it's the fact that I held them. You know, the evidence was in my arms.
Sean, I'd just kind of like to do a little bit of a follow-up. The symptoms, the drug use, I'm assuming promiscuity probably went with that. You never once associated that with the fallout of the abortion?
No. Even when I was deeper into the drug use, and I mean, it was heavy drug use. You know, I worked in restaurants and bars and would go out every night. And in addition to methamphetamine and cocaine, and I was taking 6 to 7 ecstasy pills a night, every Thursday, every Friday, every Saturday night. And there comes a point not too long after, for me, that behavior became consistent, where I was able to recognize this is not who I am. This is not what I want to be doing, with an inability to stop on my own. And so even at that point, when I knew that there was something missing, that I was clearly trying to change how I felt on the inside, it was not clear to me that it was the abortion, that it was the loss of my child.
What finally made that connection for you?
The counseling and treatment. I think I just needed somebody to pull it out of me.
Sean, I've got a question for you. What would you say to a young man and couple who are considering an abortion?
I think a couple of things. First, I would let them know that this decision does not end at the abortion. It is something that carries with it long-term consequences. And it could be consequences that you don't even realize until you hold your first child. It could be consequences that you don't even realize until you suffer your first miscarriage. You know, it could be consequences that you don't realize until you are having a conversation with someone close to you who, you know, who loses a child or suffers a miscarriage or is pregnant for the first time. And it's a lot more than I'm going to go do this and then it will be over. And then the second thing that I would do is provide as whatever resources I could on adoption and alternatives. You know, we have 3 adopted children. Our first adopted child, we just got a call one day and they said, this baby has been born. Mom's on drugs. She doesn't want to meet him. And I mean, we're talking about a girl who didn't know who the father was, carried a child to term, knowing that she wouldn't hold him, knowing that she would raise him, but carry this child to term. And that's the greatest gift, not only that you could give that child, but also to another family, but also to yourself. Like, that is the most selfless act that I think someone could do. Contrasted with abortion, which, to be blunt, is the most selfish act that someone could do. And so, you know, and then our third adopted child, we knew the mother, and she talked openly about wanting to have an abortion. She didn't follow through with it, but, you know, it certainly was a consideration. And so from personal experience, we are very blessed by those people that have made choices not to have an abortion.
Yes, as you so aptly put out there, that there are considerable blessings to the person who rejects abortion. Kevin, what would you say to parents who are facing a situation very similar to yours? The doctor has put abortion out there. In many cases, the doctor pressures and really coerces parents to choose abortion. What would you say to that couple?
We were pressured and coerced, just like you were saying. And if I was going to say anything to a late couple, I would tell them not to be passive in that situation. The feeling of, you know, turmoil to make that decision that you feel is because you know it's wrong. That's why it hurts so bad. I don't really understand the doctor's reasoning behind that. You know, in a perfect world, the doctor would be supportive and trying to explain that this child may have an issue, but he's still a human and he will still have a good life. The parent in that pressure cooker of the day, I would pray someone had the courage to say, stop, I can't do this. Decide just in an afternoon. It's too big. Whether the time limit's running out or not, hey, you can't decide something like that quickly. And then once you do, you regret it forever.
So would your advice to somebody in a similar situation be take a few deep breaths, take your time? It doesn't have to be decided right away.
I would leave the situation. Tell the doctor I can't decide on the spot. I need time. And then I would hope that they would talk with someone or pray to God to realize that, like Sean said, it doesn't end at the abortion. Life changes, but it doesn't end. No matter what decision you make, life has changed that day. And if you end the life, that much harder, the ones who saved that life, like you say, are special people and more blessed than I was.
I'm curious, Kevin, what message do you have for other men who also have an abortion in their past?
Well, if you're like me and you live for a long period of time thinking that God has condemned you and you've done the unforgivable, people, men, women, whether you're from abortion or drugs or anything, need to know that Jesus is not just for the righteous people. He's there for the worst of us. And I thought I was the worst of us. I punished myself for years until I found that Jesus can forgive, and he has forgiven me. It doesn't take it away. That feeling of condemnation is gone. And if I can help another father who's suffering in that 10-year period to realize that you can be forgiven, that's why I'm here today.
Sean, I'd like to ask you that same question. What message do you have for other men with an abortion in their past?
Sharing your story so that other men know that they are not alone is huge for your healing. And so I think that the issue that we have is that as men, we have been silenced on this issue, on the issue of abortion for so long, you know, to the point where the tagline is no uterus, no voice. But abortion isn't about uterus, right? It's about children. And Michael was my child, whether or not I have a uterus. And I lost my child, regardless of whether or not I have a uterus. And so I think that reframing the dialogue and changing the conversation so that it's not a men versus women conversation, it really takes men speaking about their personal stories so that everyone can see that this isn't an issue that just affects women. And honestly, I do understand what we're up against in part is a severe instance of men who don't care about being fathers and who don't want to be fathers. The idea that men push women into abortion at times is a real thing, but so is the idea that men want children and they are taken from them through abortion. And so it's important that we as men help to change that dialogue.
Well said. To Kevin, to your comments and your situation, I think when other men hear this program, and your story is very dramatic when you talk about the redemption that you have experienced, I think that will be a tremendous encouragement to other men. Well, thank you both for your heartfelt stories. What you share, I think, will be an inspiration to others, whether it's to come forward or to look inward to see if the spiraling down direction of their lives is associated with a past abortion. A lot of good can come from this program, and I thank you for being part of it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for the invitation.
You know, Victor, this is a story that's near and dear to my heart, not from a personal point of view, but one from one of those who counsels fathers of aborted babies who have developed literature, graduate course degrees, classes, and whatnot. And the pain is often very similar, a vein running through it. But as Sean mentioned about Kevin's story, the fact that he was handed the body of his dead child is something that was very unusual, very dramatic, and I think greatly impacted the grief that he had struggled to carry all those years.
Yeah, and you couldn't just hear it, you could feel it in Kevin's voice, the damage that that did to him and the hurt that he carried with him, as he said, for 10 years before getting that help. I'm just so appreciative of the fact that he has shared that story. I know it's going to be impactful to so many other men out there.
And I think it was medical malpractice for them to tell him and his wife that they have to make a decision on the spot whether or not their child lives or dies. That is cruel and unusual punishment. And I don't know how doctors like that sleep at night, because it is horrible to inflict that on people.
It's truly unthinkable. I want to encourage you, our listener, to go to our website, lifeissues.org. There you'll find other stories of countless other men who have been through very similar circumstances. And as Brad mentioned, they share that similar vein of the tremendous pain that abortion has caused in their life. I encourage you to share those stories with friends and family. As we mentioned, the hurt that men go through is often ignored. You can head to lifeissues.org, and you can also find out more about men hurting and get referrals to counseling, peer-to-peer counseling. If you or a loved one can relate to what we've discussed today, there is hope for you out there. Again, I want to encourage you to visit our website, lifeissues.org, for those resources. As always, be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.